we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the penultimate Series 8 Doctor Who episode, Dark Water, by none other than Monsieur Stephen Moffat. It's the first part of a two-part story. Just warning our listeners, I don't remember. Sometimes we've done these in two parts, and sometimes we haven't done these in two parts, but tonight we're going to do it in two parts.
I think it's worthy of two parts.
I think it's probably worthy of two parts, so we'll hit it. So, Clara kills Danny Pink dead by engaging him in a phone conversation on deep and important topics while he's walking to her place. She then tries to force the doctor into changing time. The doctor won't do that, but the doctor does decide he'll find him if there is any way to find him, even if he's dead, which they sort of do. And then we bump into the least interesting villain in the history of Doctor Who, Missy, who finally meets the doctor, and then, like, the Cybermen appear. And then Missy says, "I'm the master!" And the episode ends on one of Peter Capaldi's numerous gaping faces in this episode. So, listeners should know that typically Ben and I don't discuss these episodes in advance. However, this evening, as it happens, through no fault of our own, Ben and I had dinner together this evening, and we did do a fair job of avoiding talking about it in great detail, and so there's probably a surprise or two in store for Ben. But we'll start off by saying, Ben, what did you think of this episode?
Well, the thought that ran through my head as I was watching it, especially when we got to the, and I say this with air quotes, the big reveal, is that there is not one shred of originality in this. And the big reveal, even though I saw it telegraphed months ago, not only was it... The only thing about it that was surprising was that it was presented in a manner worse than I had previously expected.
Yes. So here's the thing. I completely agree that there was no originality in this story whatsoever. This was pretty uninspired in its way. And here's the surprise. I didn't hate it. I didn't like it.
I didn't like it at all. I did not like this
episode.
There
were things in it that I liked, even though they were unimaginative and uninspired. I thought that the mystery part, so we take out Clara's little fake out at the beginning and the Missy horse doo-doo at the end, and it took the part where they were exploring the tombs and going through the sort of discovery process. I actually kind of liked it, even though it was stretched out too much. So, I mean, I was watching that and I was like, I was engaged at that point, even though it was not.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And that part was like, you know, actually, this is kind of interesting. Now, unfortunately, that it crumbled like a house of cards covered in flaming oil when we got to the end of it. But
up to that moment, it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I admit. Right. So, I mean, his biggest problem here is that here we have an episode that has the time to expand out, and yet they wasted it with, like, bad Wi-Fi connections. And,
yeah.
You know, sometimes...
Really cheap gags.
Sometimes when they're padding an episode, you can do a better job of padding it, but and they try to... Sometimes it's a terrible job, sometimes it's a hidden job. This was a terribly hidden job of doing it, just like, you know, my Wi-Fi is not working. Like, what did that accomplish in this story except for to kill a few minutes
It was meaningless.
It was just there because they didn't have enough plot to fill the time we had, which is, you know, pains me. It pains me because I really think Doctor Who desperately, desperately needs more two-part stories, but not if this is what they have to do to make them into two-part stories. It's like, apparently there isn't enough idea to span 45 minutes. That's probably my bigger complaint about the story, is that just like, yeah, there was too much of nothing along the way. And the whole thing with Clara at the beginning, the psych out where she hijacks the TARDIS keys and destroys them, which of course was all done entirely either A, just so we could put it in the trailer to make people think, ooh, Impossible Girl is actually a plant to destroy the Doctor, and we've seen it in the trailer, and oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Or it was just a way to kill another 5 minutes in a story that wasn't long enough. Or both.
One of the things that really bothered me about the opening... Now, let me back up a bit. I didn't quite know what to expect. First off, when I talk about Danny Pink, let me say that if there was anything that was going to surprise me, it was that. I did not expect Danny to just out and out die. That caught me by surprise, but on the heels, literally just within split seconds of me figuring out that Danny was dead, and it took me like very little time to do it. It was a very quick deduction. On the heels of that, I was then immediately able to say, okay, and that's going to be the plot device in which the Doctor then gets caught up in this whole story about the Nether Sphere, the afterlife, whatever, and that's the death of Danny was the means to get us to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, did that part really bother me? No, not really. What I thought was kind of interesting, and I say that with tongue firmly planted in cheek, is the fake out that Clara does. Actually, it's not even a flake out.
It was a flake out, really.
The extortion is what she's trying to do to the Doctor on that volcano. One of the things that I did like about that scene, was the Doctor's defiance. I enjoyed that enormously. It pleased me to know when that he was going to be, that he would not bow down to this kind of blackmail on her part.
But however, what if it had been real? He knew it wasn't real.
Well, the thing is, I didn't know. I thought for a moment that it might have been real. My initial thought was, this is real, and the Doctor is, he's somehow going to figure out a way to get out of this mess after all the keys are destroyed, because he's the Doctor.
He has 8 keys. He can just do a David Tennant and he could pull a snap his fingers and the doors will open.
I was kind of hoping, though, given the fact that we've been seeing not a really magical Doctor who could control the door with a snap, although we have seen Clara do that this season, so she should have remembered that the keys were meaningless. Anyway, given that we have seen the Doctor be very clever, invent gadgets along those lines, I was imagining that the Doctor was going to have to find a clever way to get out of this jam that Clara was going to put him in.
I would expect that of this Doctor.
That's what I was expecting. So I was I honestly thought this was a real situation, and it gave his defiance of her really solid weight to it. And I was just really loving his every emphatic no, and watching her resolve just crumble as he was doing that. But then to find out that it was all just in her dream state, because she was asleep, kind of took the steam out of that. I was reduced from a oh wow to a mere okay.
I'll jump ahead just a little bit, but that entire scene, as I mentioned, was there so that we could get the scene in the trailer, so that it looked like there was something really dark and terrible going on with Clara, and all of this stuff about Clara being the Impossible Girl and Missy selecting Clara and all of that stuff has seemingly evaporated, and perhaps it won't next week. But it's all been a massive psych out for the audience, not from the storytelling. So they're telling the story in such a way that they're basically giving us nonsensical stuff in the story just to provide opportunities to misdirect. That's not even a good red herring.
No, it's not. It was a terrible red herring, and that's true. And that's something that I've always hated. And Doctor Who is not the only show to be guilty of this. I mean, this has become the standard procedure for all major television shows that show trailers for their following episodes, where they will edit things in such a clever way to make the audience think that something really dire is going to happen in the next episode, when in reality, you've just been had.
I don't mind them.
Yes, they did that.
I don't mind them editing it so that you appear to be had, but I do object to adding scenes in, apparently, just so that they can edit it in, so that you can be had. And that's what I feel like the lava sequence was at the beginning. It had no real meaningful place in this story, because you know something? We do see that the Doctor cares enough for Clara in this that were she emotionally crushed by the death of Danny Pink and begged the Doctor to take her without trying to blackmail him or destroy the TARDIS, he'd have done it anyway. Yeah,
that's true. There was no need to have that scene. I agree. And that's part of the reason why it all kind of turned into a big O. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, it really didn't mean anything. So there was something that started off as going to be, that I thought would be really great, that I thought would be really relevant. And in the end, it turned out that it was not. And that's something that that happens again in this very story. So let's take out, as you did, let's take out the reveal regarding Missy. Let's take out the whole bit with Clara in the prelude, and let's simply deal with the mystery of 3W.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, I was finding this fascinating. It really, at the time, seemed like a very interesting little mystery going on here. I was anxious to find out more about it. And this, I think this is part of how I evaluate episodes, because as you pointed out, it does crumble. It crumbles badly. It crumbles and burns at the very end of the episode. And with me, the way I can tell if a story or any part of a story holds up is, was my emotional fulfillment sustained by the time I finished watching it? And no, it was not, because the reveal completely undoes undoes everything that we saw regarding 3W, that I had to look. I mean, I could no longer take that entire mystery and give it any kind of credibility.
You know, I think you've explained it pretty well there. This is an argument I've had with others in the past, not usually with you. In fact, I probably never with you, because I think you and I are of like mind on this. But there are people who could watch a program, and provided that the scene-by-scene basis provides them something interesting, good acting, good emotion, good something, then it is a worthwhile pursuit of the time. But to me, those are obviously important, but when you reach the end, if you just chuck it aside, it's like having a great cake with somebody put a dog, and I will bleep that out, in the last bite. It ruins everything about the cake for me from that point forward.
Yeah, if you walk away with a bad taste in your mouth, then guess what? You've got a bad taste in your mouth.
Exactly.
It's going to be hard to remember everything that led up to the bad taste.
My gosh, that was good. You know, and then, and I can't divorce that knife in the back or that in your mouth that you get from these poorly contrived sketches of stories, and the framework is there, and little bits are strung all along the way, and then it's not a full story. We haven't seen the full story, although I think we have seen the entirety of the 3W's story.
I think so.
I think, you know, now we're going to go on to a Cyberman invasion, and hopefully they're going to try to explain to me a couple of things, and I'm going to throw them out here because it, and again, I'm still ignoring the big transgendered elephant in the room.
Oh, please.
Would that actually be considered transgendered if you regenerated from one to another? Is that, or would that be a different definition?
It's a good question.
All right.
It's a gender swap. That's for
Cyberman.
Sure.
What the heck? What the heck? Let's just start with that. What the heck? I mean, Cybermen, right? What are they? They take human beings, they replace parts of them, looking back to, go say, the 10th planet, the organs, they replace the organs and stuff. But now we're to understand that Cybermen are basically nothing but skeletons.
Skeletons.
Left? What's the point of the skeleton? Why isn't that a weak link? Why not just replace that with metal and be done with it? In the end, I don't understand the logic of that. And then, again, is it because we need the brain? Is the brain still in there? Because you can't really see inside those skeletons. Obviously, the eyes aren't there or anything like that. But the brain might be in there. Because in the dark water, all we can see... Oh, there's one. Dark water, that's where they got the name? Just because it's the... chemical that keeps us from finding out they're Cybermen a little too early.
Yeah.
All right.
Let me ask you this.
Who would call that dark water? If I invented that, what you would not call that? Hey, I think that's dark water. I mean, I can see more through it.
Yeah.
Then so therefore I'm going to call it dark water.
X-ray water would be the first thing that come to my mind.
Wouldn't make a great episode title though. Again,
no,
faked it wouldn't. Out for the audience.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, how long did it take you to figure out that those skeletons inside the dark water were Cybermen? Before the reveal.
When I saw a finger moving. So in other words, as soon as they moved, I saw it from an earlier trailer during the week that one of them was pushing the button, and I go, oh, that's obviously either a proto-Cyberman, or I didn't realize that it was a Cyberman in invisible armor.
The moment one of them turned its head.
Yeah. Well, that's basically the same thing. As soon as I knew that the skeletons were moving, then it was...
I knew. Right off the bat, it was a Cyberman.
Cyberman. That. But here's my point. You catch somebody, you will be upgraded. They take them, they chop them up, and then they turn them into a Cyberman, leaving their brain behind. We're not even doing that here.
No. Now it's
we're
an
actually
upload of
stealing other people's brain. So... is Danny Pink's body being converted into a Cyberman, or will Danny Pink's emotionally deleted mind be loaded into a different body that's been upgraded to a Cyberman? And what's the point of that other than just creating the dichotomy of having the nether sphere? And, there's some interesting questions that are going to come up with that. Do they have to have his consent to delete his emotions? Why didn't they just edit his emotions when he got there? Why go through the whole rigmarole of the afterlife and signing the paperwork? Oh, because it, A, wastes time. B, creates faux mystery.
It does not serve any purpose to the story.
There we go. I think that's the correct answer on this. Everything in this doesn't serve any purpose in the story. And that's not even asking why Missy would do this in the first place. But we'll get to Missy later.
Let me get on this. I'll get on the whole Missy thing in a minute with you as well. One of the things that... And this is why the whole mystery of 3W does not hold up. Why is Missy doing this? Why is she carrying on this pretense for this incredibly long time? What is the purpose of it?
She's batshit insane.
Aside from that?
I think that's the only answer we're ever going to get.
But that's a terrible answer.
It's what we got with the John Sim Master. And it's basically what we got with the Eric Roberts Master.
So that's the master that we've got now, that he's just nuts.
Yep. And I don't like that. You know, I think when you're writing, you're actually writing the character of the master. Yesterday was Halloween. And when the kids were over here and they were out doing our Halloween thing, then I put on Pyramids of Mars and the Demons to, you know, get some sort of Halloween themed Doctor Who as well. I could. So there's Roger Delgado in his heyday. And it's his best. It's not his best.
No,
plot,
Demons is not his best.
But
it's a far cry better than what we've been getting since the show came back.
It's a far cry better since we've been getting since Anthony Ainley got there. And I'll get to him in a second. But, you know, the master wants power. That's what he wants. He wants power. Yes, we could argue that, well, obviously anybody that just wants power must be crazy. But that doesn't mean he has to go dancing around the room and crazy. I mean, there's different kinds of crazy. And
the master has never been one to actually want to destroy everything.
But
that's not been his goal. You're right. He wants power. He wants power to control and to rule over others. And what we've been getting lately is a master that is simply out to destroy.
After Legopolis.
Yeah.
After Legopolis, the master has been illogically ridiculous. And in fact, Anthony Ainley, and I really, really want to love Anthony Ainley's performance as the master. He was a pantomime master. I mean, all you have to do is to look at, I think it's Mark of the Rani, and there's a scene where he's literally, I think he's holding his hands in front of him, up, kind of elbows down, hands out, and his tail's out behind him, and he's tiptoeing like a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Yeah.
If only his feet were going, as he walked along on his toes, you can't look at that performance and go, this Roger Delgado's master is truly dead. So,
the only one who comes close is Derek Jacobi.
Oh, now he was good for the three or four lines.
For the three or four lines that he was the master, yes.
But the John Sim master, now Missy master, they have been written. They're writing. I mean, I blame Anthony Ainley and the directors for letting him do those things that way. The plots weren't, his plans weren't logical, but I blame him and the director for allowing that kind of acting. But they've actually written these scripts to be more over the top and ridiculous than Anthony Ainley's acting as the master. So you're now giving, John Sim is an excellent actor, and you give him a horrible, horrible part. And I have no idea who Michelle Gomez?
Yeah, Michelle Gomez.
Michelle Gomez is. I've never seen her before. As best I can tell from this, she is a shite actor because it's terrible. Maybe she's the best actor in Britain, but it's not in evidence from here.
No.
And so that's not good either. But, you know, this plan is obviously, and you alluded to it, so you've obviously picked up on it. One of my complaints about Castrovalva is that it's such a ridiculously long. Legopolis, fine. But Castrovalva, I mean, that's like centuries the master waited.
Yeah.
He like pulled his own Trenzalore on Castrovalva.
You know, and it's the same thing with Time Flight.
Yeah, Time Flight's really bad about
that,
too.
That's really bad, too, because you've got the master who, where no one else is around, is pulling off this whole charade that he's this mystical, wizardly kind of character, when clearly the only person he's really out to fool is the Doctor. The Doctor's not even around, and he's still doing it. So what does that mean? It means that these little bits are being written for our benefit.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you are taking away anything that is genuine in what that character is doing. And we get that. We've had that a number of times in Classic Who. We're getting that in spades in this episode. And
this has been going on.
That's what's bugging me about it.
This has been going on at least since Victorian times, because they harvested the half-faced man.
Right.
It's going on into the far, far flung future, because the soldier that went into the Dalek was snatched out. So we're not talking about just brains from people in 20th century, which frankly would probably be enough, but we're talking hundreds of
years.
There's
a big time span going on.
That this has been going on. And so would you actually be going hundreds of years into the future of Earth for a plan that you're planning to execute in 21st century Earth? It's, again, they threw Missy into the episodes along the way in completely illogical ways just to keep the thing bobbing along, and it doesn't even make sense with what we're getting at the end.
There's something else, too. Why the pretense of paradise? There's no need for that. We know that it takes no effort at all for the Cybermen whenever they have absorbed, shall we say, another person into, and I hate to use the word collective, but that's the only word that comes to mind, that there is some kind of programming that takes place, which then overrides any of the human element that might have been there. We've seen it happen. So what's the pretense of having everybody believe that they're in some kind of administrative red tape afterlife?
I don't know.
It makes no sense at all. All you got to do is just, I mean, if you're
the,
just
the
storing these.
Crazy, so.
I know, but it, again, it is.
Doesn't have to make sense. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
It's just really, really crazy because there's no real logical reason to have to create this BS environment for all these disembodied minds. All they need to be is just kind of stored a la Matrix, and then when the time is right, upload them into your Cybermen, and whatever computer or electronic programming already exists in the cyber bodies, that will override what any kind of human element that may still linger.
Yeah.
So to carry them on into this, and then to create this ridiculous notion of having people delete their own feelings, and I get the feeling that that's probably the first reason why Danny was asked to have that meeting with the young boy that he killed.
To emotionally upset him. That's right.
Right. It was to upset him so that he would be willing to delete. When clearly that didn't happen, they use this ridiculous phone call with Clara. And now let's talk about that for a moment. Now, to me, that phone conversation here again is another thing that served. It got nowhere. It was more padding.
Mm-hmm.
Because
all Clara, we did get to see Danny basically sacrifice himself so that Clara wouldn't come get him.
True. That's the only thing. But Clara, for this entire time, she's asking for some kind of proof.
Which would be no value since they already admitted it was telepathic, and the doctor should have known that.
Yeah. So all it does is stretch out time and allow Clara to have her own little, oh my God, what is that thing that I'm looking at behind me in a glass cabinet?
Mm-hmm.
It's again.
Well,
she's
seen Cybermen, so she knows what it is.
Now, that was my next question. Has she? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
I'm trying. Has she seen Cybermen?
Yes, with the two kids. They went to that awful Cybermen story.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The amusement planet.
Yes, there we go. So yes,
yeah, with Mr. Clever.
Yes. So yes, she absolutely
knows
what Cybermen are.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Unless, of course, they've decided to throw that continuity out too, and I don't know what those are.
No, I kind of thought she recognized it.
Yeah, she.
I kind of got the feeling that when she turned around and looked at the Cybermen, that there was something, that there was some kind of recognition on her face. So I thought so, but I just couldn't remember if she had actually seen Cybermen or not. You're right; it was on the amusement planet that she did. So, but anyway, that's the only payoff there. That she gets a chance to see a Cyberman right in front of her. Other than that, the whole dialogue between her and Danny serves no purpose at all. And even before she says that she's going to come to get him, she's still asking for verification. She's still asking for proof. And Danny
the doctor
was,
told her to.
Yeah, and Danny was, and good on him and good on her. But Danny was unable to provide it.
Yeah, that's a good question. Is that because it's not really Danny? I think
that's
it is.
What I'm wondering.
I think it is, but
well, I think it is Danny too. But I found it interesting that he was unable to, which then again makes the scene meaningless.
I don't know what he could have told her, though. Like I said, I mean, the doctor said, well, if they know you're looking, they did a telepathic scan, they could be faking this. But if they did a telepathic scan, any question Clara would know the answer to, Danny...
he would give.
He would be able to give. So that really wasn't very well thought out. So let's take this question. Were they asking him about him being a killer for a reason? Or was the reason because the Cybermen need killers? Or is it because it would be easier to find something to poke a hole in his emotions and make him push the delete button, which again, why is there any reason for him to have to push the delete button? Why they've never needed informed consent before. Why would they need it now?
Exactly. Personally, I think it's the third answer, but then again, it's a stupid answer because it's never been needed. Why are we doing it now? Again, this is something that just does not jive with established Doctor Who continuity. And granted, yeah, when we talked about this tonight, yes, Doctor Who canon has always been very loose and free because it's very timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, and yeah, history is always being changed here and there. It's being tweaked constantly, but there are certain things that are absolute, and the way the Cybermen have been betrayed in the past is kind of absolute. It hasn't been, even in current Who, the Cybermen have always presented themselves as being able to just take their emotionless programming and override that.
So is the difference is what the mistress has brought to this equation, the ability for the Cybermen to convert dead people without having to steal the bodies of recently dead. So they snag the minds of recently dead, but they put them in the bodies of old dead that they've extracted from graves or something that no one will. I mean, that's a possibility, so you wouldn't notice right away. But I'm getting into
a little metaphysical there.
I'm pushing a little bit hard,
yeah,
for that. And I'm still wondering why they need their skeletons to
at that point. Why not just completely go entirely synthetic?
So here's a mind.
A real mind bender?
Yeah, that's a good word for it. A mind bender. I had another word in mind, but I've done enough bleeping tonight.
Yeah, we don't want to have to attach
so
the explicit
Missy's
tag.
So Missy's been doing this for a long time, at least back to Victorian times. So they're taking the minds of all the dead people. The Nether Sphere is obviously huge. The Gallifreyan hard drive, which is obviously meant to be like the Matrix, has got all that stuff. Is the Brigadier in there?
Is
the Brigadier coming back
really
as a Cyberman?
That's a really good question.
Next week,
because we do know, although we didn't see it in this episode, when we had the trailer for last week, they were clearly showing little clips from both parts, and we do know that Kate Smith does make an appearance.
Wouldn't it be cool if they get around to the point where they're just about to be killed, and the Cyberman is going to kill him? Turns out to be Lethbridge Stewart, and he manages to override his programming and save the day. That would be awesome, and they wouldn't actually need his voice for that.
They don't need Nick Courtney for that, no.
No, they don't. That would be at least a fair ending. Maybe he could shoot Missy dead. That'd be good, too. I think dead without regeneration might be the thing to do to the Master at this point.
That would be kind of cool. However, of course, it's very possible that by the time we see it, that we would kind of walk away and say, yeah, but they didn't surprise me. Which might serve as a bit of an anticlimactic disappointment.
Yeah, the whole thing is got issues.
The foundation for this episode is very weak.
And what about the whole part where they're... What is this whole bit about the dead feel, what's going on? Is that because they're not really dead? Is that because... Because obviously the policeman from the caretaker was dead. Not just sort of dead. He was definitely dead.
Yeah. I don't know. And again, there's something that does not appear to serve any purpose, except for the fact that we get this really whacked out explanation as to what 3W means, and it's three words. Don't burn me.
Don't cremate me, yeah. Okay, here's another one. Dr. Chang. The doctor, the proper doctor, flips out the psychic paper and he says, oh, another government inspection?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Government inspection? We're in 21st century.
Who's inspecting them?
British government inspectors know about your Cybermen tanks?
Yeah, who's inspecting them? Uh-huh. Yeah, there's another really weird line that gets dropped, which does not get any kind of follow-up whatsoever. I mean, maybe UNIT, but that doesn't make any sense. Why would UNIT do an inspection on it and then just let it go on?
Well, I mean, obviously they can't see that they're Cybermen because they're in the dark water, but still.
No, but the whole concept of creating this nether sphere.
For what? Yeah, well, they wouldn't know about the nether sphere because that would just be a disco ball hanging on the ceiling. All they know about is that these guys have bodies in the tanks of water for no apparent reason. I'm so rich, I'd like my skeleton to be in water for all eternity.
And how is that different from any other kind of
being dead
funereal process, be it cremation or burial? How is this any different? I mean, is that supposed to provide any kind of satisfaction to the departed or the survivors of the departed? I mean, it makes no sense at all to introduce this concept that they're being inspected by the government. Now, granted, at the time, I thought, okay, you know, I mean, we really had no idea where the doctor gone. We thought that maybe, and that was the other thing, the premise of them going someplace to this, I don't know, this other reality where the departed go. One, to me, that smacked of just pure magic.
Well,
so, which I don't know.
It didn't turn out that way.
No, it didn't turn out that way. And in a way, I'm kind of glad about that. But the fact that the doctor even proposed the idea to me seemed really bordering on the outrageous. So, okay, but let's go with that.
Well, after Into the Forest of the Night, whatever, then magic is real.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, so let's hand wave and say the doctor does manage to take, or he thinks he can take the TARDIS into this supernatural realm where the departed go to, or at least someplace where the departed, it's an access point to the departed. So given that premise, the idea of another government inspection kind of makes sense, because maybe there's some other really twisted oversight committee that has to check in on everything that's going on. But yeah, once we get the reveal that this is actually 21st century London, along with everything else, that whole, as you put it, house of cards just simply collapses and is just fried on the spot. It's just another story element that does not hold up to any scrutiny by the time you get to the end of the story.
Yeah, there's so much going on about the whole, dead feel the bodies and Dr. Scarossa discover this. Like, there's another weird one. Why invent a character, Dr. Scarossa, who discovered this, who's not present? I mean, he is sort of present. He's the Cyberman in the tank in that office. But it's such a strangely convoluted... Why couldn't Dr. Chang be the guy who discovered it? Or if Dr. Scarossa has been converted into a Cyberman, then there's no Dr. Scarossa left. So it's not like we're going to have a scheming Machiavellian scientist who perhaps had some great plan to bring the Cyberman here. He's gone. His character is gone.
It's just another one of these story elements that seems really good when you're in the moment. But when you reach the end, and you start getting all your reveal, and then you look back, you see that none of this actually holds up. And to me, that's the real test. Does the reveal, if you're going to pull this kind of a surprise, then whatever reveal you're going to have, if you're going to make an effective story, whatever reveal you're going to have has to add to what's been going on, not take away. And that's what this did. It completely took away everything that led up to it.
And it'll probably be completely forgotten, but or perhaps just slightly hand-waved.
It's already being forgotten by the people who are in love with this story.
And then, so, you know, going back to the whole, this scheme has been going on forever. I mean, that's just Missy taking bodies. But what about the clockwork droids on their way to wanting to go to the promised land? And what about the robots from the 51st century... Was that the Marie Antoinette? Was that the other ship that, that went back in time?
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. That was I'm talking about the one for Robot of Sherwood. They also were going to the Promised Land.
They were going to the Promised Land.
What's with robots wanting to go to the Promised Land? Is becoming a Cyberman the Promised Land for a robot? Ooh, I get an upgrade. I get a skeleton.
I'm beginning to wonder if that isn't the case.
It's like, I don't think it is. I think it's like, you just have your characters looking for the Promised Land, just write it into the script somewhere along the way, and we'll be good with that. But I mean, come on, 51st century, and it's over the ridiculous. Oh, and I'm going to ask one more question about the non-Missy part of the story, and that is at the end when Danny was getting ready, thinking about pushing the delete button, was the boy actually behind him, or was that a reflection in his mind of the boy being behind him? It's in the iPad in the last shot.
Yeah, I did see it.
And we did get to see that Danny Pink did kill an innocent child. Big shock there.
Yeah.
We kind of
well, we all kind of guessed that. It was pretty much telegraphed from the very first time we meet him. So that was not a really big surprise. That was merely verification. As for what Danny saw, I have a funny feeling that that was really the boy.
By the way, that's what Danny could have told Clara. He could have told her that. She couldn't verify that it's true, but she knew enough about Danny that he was hiding something about killing people in the army, that if that was the moment he chose to reveal it to her, that would have been, I think she would have taken that as proof.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway, so I'm just wondering if the boy really is there and will actually talk Danny out of doing it.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. That, I mean, we know that the boy wanted to talk to Danny. According to Seb, the boy was one of the first people that actually wanted to have a discussion with Danny, then ran away. And at that time, I thought, well, okay, what was the whole purpose of that entire scene except maybe to provoke Danny? But now, okay, looking back, maybe it was to help precipitate a later scene where he convinces Danny not to delete his emotions.
You say maybe the boy is complicit in the efforts to get him to lose his memory and but feels guilty about it. You know, could be that too. It's like, well, you come here, you make him feel bad, but the boy himself knows that two wrongs don't make a right.
Right.
Here's your chance to get a revenge on the guy who killed you. Anyway.
But then maybe when he looked at Danny,
and if anything is deleted, can it be undeleted anyway?
Well, it's also very possible that maybe there was something in the meeting that he had with Danny, because Danny was very remorseful during his first confrontation. And I think maybe the boy, if he had been used to help set Danny up to delete his own emotions, maybe the boy realized that, he's not the monster that you wanted me to think he was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's always that little bit. I imagine we're going to find out more in next week's story regarding that.
I hope so.
Clearly Danny's story's not over.
Oh, no, he just hits the delete button and that's it. And he becomes a Cyberman and joins the Legion of Cybermen. And this just is not... It's not good. So,
no, but it's beginning to look like. In fact, you know, you had mentioned that that wouldn't it be really cool if the brig showed up and did a turn? I expect actually it's going to be Danny.
Could be. It does invalidate Clara's timeline, but yeah.
Especially regarding Orson.
Right. Right. Have you got anything else?
Regarding just what we've been talking about?
Yeah. The not Missy part.
No. The bulk of the crap that I've been reading right now has all been about the reveal.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna put one out to throw in here before we to really beat it, but it's on. Think of it. Clara didn't recognize Missy.
No, she did not.
And we have, I know we are, this podcast and lots of people out there, I mean, they've been leading it up so that we think that, you know, that Missy was the woman that brought them together. And of course, we've had these lines from Missy, oh, I'm glad I picked you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it would seem like she was the woman that gave her the phone number. They've been leading us along that path. But when the two came face to face, there was no recognition.
None. That you would have thought that Clara would have recognized the voice. And then still there's this big, there's that little bit of a mystery. Why Clara? What was the whole point of that?
Obviously, there's another piece to this story that we haven't seen. Which will be next week. But
again, it's setting up Clara to be far too important a character in the Doctor's
life. My concern is that it's not going to be anything at all. I mean, for all the weight they've given it, and then it turns out to be nothing, just like everything else. That pertaining to Clara, everything that's been important about in Clara has turned out to be relatively nothing.
Yeah.
Even jumping into the Doctor's timeline and sacrificing herself is not a particularly grand conclusion to the Doctor finding this impossible girl everywhere. And it's going to drive me down a mire. But I, based on what we've seen so far this time, I don't have high expectations for part two of this story, and I don't have high expectations for Clara's story being once again resolved.
No, I don't either. Not the way they're painting it. I mean, they're going to have to pull some pretty serious rabbits out of their collective hats in order to make this work. And given Moffat's history, and I know that we have really picked on Moffat a great deal for, and as you pointed out in the last episode, for everything that
we didn't like,
we always just planted on Moffat's lap. But hey, there's a good reason. It's because all the garbage has been lately coming from Moffat's mind.
It hasn't, I really did feel it during the podcast. It hit me as we were discussing. It's like, yeah, we really are cherry picking that out and saying, Jamie Matheson may have come up with some of those bad ideas too. I can't say for a fact one way or the other, but it does feel like our expectations for what Moffat is going to give us are very, very poor. And, here is a man who is every bit as big of a fan of Doctor Who as you or I, who is as steeped in its history as you or I, who has this sometimes very good concept of continuity. I mean, for crying out loud, they could have just completely forgotten the 12 regeneration limit. And yet, he went out of his way to address it in Day of the Doctor, which says, here's a man that knows we've got continuity, here's something we have to play in, and I will use the framework of what I've got. But then he takes another step and he says, but let's burn off an extra regeneration or two so that I can bring the crisis to a head early, so that I can get this done in my time. So he has a grasp of the continuity, but he has no problem with discarding it when it suits him to do so. Tactical purposes.
Yeah.
So here's one that he's forgotten, and this isn't even from old Who. This is from new Who, and I think, I won't swear which episodes, but we are going all the way back to Eccleston, and we are going to and Tennant, both of whom. If there was another Time Lord alive in the universe, I would know that he existed. And the only way he didn't know about the Master being on Earth as Mr. Saxon was that he had set up a worldwide jamming thing that prevented the Doctor from knowing about that. Now, I suppose maybe he's got another one, or she's got another one of those jamming fields all over there. But at standing next to each other, hand on, tongue in mouth,
yeah,
and he can't detect that this is another
Time Lord
at that range, even putting his hand on her hearts and still thinking that was a robot, it it boggles the mind that they would just reject this whole, you know, Time Lords, no Time Lords, when see Time Lords, see Time Lords.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling that, and we've seen RTD be guilty of this as well, that they, every time a new showrunner comes on board, and we don't have a lot of history on this per se, especially with the resurgence and the return of Doctor Who, but it seems like that whenever you get a new showrunner, it's like, okay, this is now my show, so I can, it's a smorgasbord in terms of continuity and canon. I can pick what I want to keep and then discard the rest.
So the Missy, let's Missy. I mean, I think that the little bits we've had of Missy so far have been disinteresting. Have not really made me care about the mystery of Missy along the way. And this whole I'm the Doctor's girlfriend motif along the way has been, you know, okay, creepy stalker chick. And then we see it, and there's no way we can't blame this on the faction, the vocally loud, but I still think grossly misguided faction, who were really looking for a female Doctor regeneration. Yes. I think this is Moffat's way of saying, addressing, hey, look, that this really is a stupid idea. Look how bad this is. I'm going to make this as bad as I possibly can to show you just how bad this idea is. Ugh. And here it is. I've hired somebody who can't apparently act, or if she can, I've given her lines so bad that nobody could overcome them. And I've made her a completely cartoonish caricature of a crazy cat lady with an obsession on somebody without the cats. And that, you know, goes right back to a survival. And we can't address this now without looking at sexuality in Time Lords. Because he's forced that on us. Just as he forced the Master's tongue down the Doctor's throat, he has forced the issue of sexuality on us. And what does this mean in the context of Doctor Who? Does this mean that, for example, you know, there's the eternal debate, and I will for the moment remove, and my apologies in advance, but I will remove gay people from the equation. But you know, there has been the staple of sitcoms forever. Can a man and a woman, a single man and a single woman, or even not single, be great friends and not have some sort of sexual undertone to it? Is that the nature of the human, or is that the nature of the sitcom writer? And I feel like by A, changing the Master's gender, and then B, making the Master apparently be sexually got the hots for the Doctor now, that the Moffat's saying no, they can't. That no, beings are too shallow to have intergender friendships. I don't know what the heck. Is it just because she's crazy? I'm so crazy, I'm gonna be obsessed about the Doctor. What?
I honestly don't know. I'm still.
They could repopulate the universe with Time Lords on their own now.
There's a lot of questions about Missy. I, for one, have a really bad time dealing with the idea of the Master regenerating into a woman. Now, I've got a friend from another podcast who was posting on Facebook earlier tonight, and even suggests, although to me, I think this is just equally, if not more so, outlandish.
I think Anthony Ainley's Master was gay.
No, but that's
I think this is just wish fulfillment now.
Yeah. Please, no. 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 No, this friend, he poses the idea that the master somehow ended up on Karn. Do the math.
Ooh, I'd like boobies, please.
Yeah, I find the idea of him actually managing to have the sisterhood give him any of the elixir absolutely rubbish.
Well, he could have just killed them all.
He it's the could master. Have, but it, he could have, but...
The real master would have done that. Delgado would have done that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. And here, again, is the total illogic. Why go to Karn then?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any evidence that...
No, I mean, if Karn... If he was so hip on the idea of this elixir and what it can do, why not go there sooner? Especially when his life was at an end. Why not go there pre-Deadly Assassin?
Well, he may not have known about them pre-Deadly Assassin. I mean, it's possible that... I think your friend's theory is as probably as good as anything that Moffat has come up with, but I don't think that there's any reason to think that they would even go to that well again. I think it'll be something else. Although we are missing the big grapefruit in the room there, and that is how did the master escape from being trapped on Gallifrey, battling it out with Rassilon with his lightning bolts and degenerating body? And why did he think the doctor? Why does she think the doctor abandoned him? There.
And why refer to this whole abandonment thing, but earlier in the year give us this BS about my boyfriend? I mean,
well,
there's,
I mean that's
again,
the crazy obsession. So I mean,
I know it's something very stalkerish.
Well, let's take this out. That one, I'm not going to defend her boyfriend, okay? But I will sort of. All right, and that is if you look at Roger Delgado's master. He was out to control the universe. When we first meet Anthony Ainley's master, he was out to control the universe, but that very rapidly became, I'm out to muck with the doctor. I'm out to get my revenge on the doctor. He's thwarted my plans so many times, I'm just obsessed with the doctor. I'm willing to spend centuries trying to kill the doctor in some ridiculously silly way when I could just shoot him with a gun, as she could have done right there in St. Paul's Cathedral today after she killed Dr. Chang. She could have turned around, shot him dead, as bazillions of times the master has done before. The doctor is an obsession. Destroying the doctor has been an obsession with all of the masters since Anthony Ainley. So I suppose that if not only does your gender change, but your gender orientation changes, that obsession could go into I'm obsessed, I love him kind of thing.
I
can see
that.
That's kind of why she might think of him as her boyfriend. It's her, he's mine. No one kills him but me. He's mine.
Which would explain why John Sims' master decided to duke it out with Rassilon at the end of that episode. Instead of letting Rassilon kill the doctor.
Instead of giving us just a moment where the master actually was heroic at the end, just before he died, he actually did the right thing. That personally, I thought that was better in a way.
I agree. I like that better. But still, there is this idea that maybe John Sims' master or the master in general just couldn't stomach the idea of anybody else taking the doctor out. I mean, we've seen that in Trial of a Time Lord. We've kind of sort of seen that in his his dealings with Irani a little bit. So it's not a new idea. And so I could see why this new gender regeneration, whether it was brought about by...
Regeneration?
I didn't want to say that, but there it is.
Well, there it is. Trademark. Lone Locus Productions.
So any future use of that, you owe us. Whether that regeneration was brought about through the elixir, as my friend Brad pointed out, or if it
you mean
was
so
just...
he went to Carn and there's like a row of bottles on one side that are in blue cabinets, and there's a row of bottles on the other side that are in pink cabinets. And so
he picked
the blue one because their gender color biases are reversed on Carn, and thinking that was the boy one, and got turned into a time lord.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's Carn, to be honest. I don't think the sister's got anything to do with it. I think that's a stretch.
Wow. I just did a search on Twitter. There is no use of the word regeneration.
Okay. Fusion Patrol owns it now.
We own it.
Yeah.
We own it.
Regardless,
all you people can do is go check right now on our timeline on Fusion Patrol, and I am typing in regeneration
hashtag.
That's right. That's the only thing.
It's
in
ours
this.
Now.
And it's mine. That's the first one on the internet right now.
Ah, very good.
I finally have a first on the internet. And
yay!
It's a hollow, bitter victory, I have to say.
Well, out of the ashes of a really bad episode, you were able to trademark a word.
Hope I
so at least something good came
out
of it.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay.
So something good came out of it. But in any event, regardless of how this came about, I could see how this obsession could turn into this fatal attraction kind of
basically
feeling that...
Cartoonish, though it is.
It is that Missy has for the Doctor now. I can sort of get that. I just have a whole problem with the changing of the gender, you know, and it's not that I'm trying to be sexist or anything, because I think in changing the Master's gender in this way, that the show is now guilty of sexism.
Well, I mean, it's certainly by turning him into a crazy cat lady without the cats, that
yeah.
is, I would call that sexism. I mean, it's like, whoa, you turned into a woman, so now you're going to be a crazy cat lady woman. Absolutely it is. And this is... All right. If the character were human, I'm sure we've covered this ground again, but for crying out loud, it's obviously it's here and we're going to cover it again. If it were human, I'm not buying it. Obviously humans can't regenerate, but you know, the fundamental differences between male and female are at the genetic level, and you're rebuilding your body up at the point, unless you go all the way back to nothing, you're still XY chromosome, combination to create the gender that you were in the first place. So maybe Time Lord genetic material is different. I will go so far as to say that, you know, it strikes me as improbable, but okay, fine. Time Lords are not humans. They're rebuilding of their genetic code or their cellular acts. It's at a cellular level, not a genetic level, as far as we know, because the Doctor has repeatedly referred to it as every cell in the body. But goes through the regeneration. But the part that gets me is that it's not the in-story situation. What gets me is for all the people who want the Doctor to change gender, a lot of what I hear, not all of it, but a lot of what I hear is because just like when they made the Doctor a Northerner, when Christopher Eccleston is to show that, you know, not everybody who's the Doctor is a posh Londoner, or, you know, that other people can be heroes too, and that he is the for everyone. And so therefore, you know, a woman Doctor, a female Doctor is more inclusive. And that is a good goal, but having a character who has spent 2,000 years as a man, becoming the man that he is, and getting all the things that he has learned, and all the things that he has seen in the universe, and all the things that he has accomplished as a man, and then turning him into a woman, is not showing you that a woman is capable of all these things too. That is showing you that a man is capable of all those things, and he might turn into a woman at some point and still have all that experience. If Romana had returned as a 2,000-year-old Time Lord, I would expect her to be every bit, if not more, the amazing being that the Doctor is. And that would be conveying the right message. And it isn't about, who is the star of the show. It's about the message. And I think the message is not right. But here we've also seen that not only has the master been turned into a woman, but frankly, an even nuttier one than he was before. Yeah,
a really batty one.
And I'm not seeing the menace yet. So no. Perhaps.
No, I mean, the only time, I mean, we talked, you made the mention about how every little bit we've had with Missy so far has just been bad. There was only, to me, there was only one that had any kind of interest to it. And that was at the end of In the Forest of the Dark.
Right.
And that was, You Surprise Me, and how I love surprises. I mean, I will admit there was something in that scene, in that delivery, that didn't seem crazy. It didn't seem outrageous. It seemed thoughtful and possibly even slightly annoyed at what had happened. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I found the portrayal of Missy interesting, but that was the only time. Everything else leading up to that and since then was just nuts, off the wall nuts, and it makes Missy out to be a completely unconvincing character.
In the same way that the John Sim Master was an unconvincing.
Right. I mean, you know, and people can refer to regenerations. Oh well, you know, look at Matt Smith. I mean, he was kind of like bouncing all over the place and. That is true, but at the same time, there were moments where Matt Smith's Doctor, at least in his stories, showed the Doctor was written in such a way that even then showed that he was able to think his way out of a situation, no matter how bizarre or madcap it might have seemed. We're not getting even that.
She could completely turn it around next week, and instead of a mustache twirling villain, she's a parasol twirling villain, but still, next week could be brilliant, but setup is not.
The setup was terrible. I got no indication. And why, when we first meet Missy, why the whole charade about Missy is nothing more than just an android with human heart, or human hearts in this case, or double hearts? Why even that charade? What's the whole point? It served, again, no purpose.
It's for the audience. It's
yeah, it's to screw with us. But it does not benefit the story. There's no real character gain for Missy to try and mess with the Doctor that way. So if there's no personal gain within the context of the story, then don't do it for our benefit, because it becomes disingenuous. And that's what this story was. There was a lot of this disingenuous storytelling going on.
Well, it's only half a story, and it was a light half a story, and we've already cranked up well over our standard recording time.
Because we had a lot to talk about.
And I'm afraid we're going to have a lot to talk about. I feel cheated we didn't have Unit this time. But
yeah, I mean, given the way they teased Unit, I was hoping that we get something. Okay, so I'm guessing we're going to get a Unit-heavy episode next week.
Well, battling the Cybermen and the Master, that's what Unit do.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Any thoughts or predictions for next time?
More of the same. Sadly, I'm expecting more of the same. I mean, I walked into this episode expecting to be disappointed, and I was. I was very disappointed by it.
I have to say, I don't have any. I don't have any predictions for the episode. I can envision, like I say, I can envision that there'll be no logical reason for them to have gone through this elaborate ruse. That'll just be an elaborate ruse, and that it'll be a relatively standard Cyberman invading the planet. No good reason why the Master would want to do that. No good reason for the Doctor to be the apple of her eye. I'm guessing we're going to have to kill the Master off again.
Again, for the how many billionth time, it seems like?
Yeah. Yep. And do we come back to the clue that we did talk about in, I don't remember which episode it was, but there's the episode, oh yes, there's it's Into the Dalek, where not only was the effect used for materializing around the soldier at the last moment of life was exactly the same as the effect used as the soldier ending up in paradise, which, you know, was a TARDIS materialization. We don't hear the TARDIS materialize, but it was a TARDIS, you know, it was the same effect. And so does that mean that maybe Danny really isn't dead? Maybe
we never saw it. No, we didn't. We saw a body, but we never identified that it was Danny.
Right. And we barely saw the body, the way they edited the episode. So that Clara sees something and then suddenly she's in an empty street, and very, very unusual editorial choice on that.
But whatever it was a charade that was done cleverly enough to make everybody think that Danny was dead.
Even Danny.
Apparently. So, I don't know. We'll have to wait until next week to find out that.
All right. Well, Ben, I guess we'll talk more about this after the season finale next week.
I cannot wait.
Fixed everything, or probably just thrown more gasoline and a few more cards before lighting it on fire. But either way, listeners, I hope you'll join us again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, search for Fusion Patrol, or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.